Hi, Tina.
Hi, Leia. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Good, good, good. So what's on our docket today?
Oh, well, this is kind of fun. This is our first show that was a request. I had put up a little question to the folks out there, you know, what do you want to hear? What do you want us to talk about? And someone wanted to know, how do you talk to your doctor about integrative medicine?
Ooh, that's a big topic. I like it.
Yeah. So we're going to be covering that today, but then we're going to have a couple other episodes that have to do with, you know, how do you talk to your doctor, you know, at your appointments, and one other subject, which escapes me right now. But that's okay. It could always change.
If it's the topic we talked about, it was genetic testing.
Oh, there you go. That's it. Yes, yeah. That was what it was.
Yes, I remember it well.
Oh, yes. So that's what we'll be covering today, is talking to your doctor about integrative medicine. And then the next couple of weeks, we'll keep the conversation going.
Sounds good. Well, this will be an interesting topic since we have diverse experiences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've mentioned before that we both were trained in integrative cancer centers. So we kind of started off very similar. And then You actually have a lot more experience about talking to your patients, about talking to their doctor. So I'm going to be learning some stuff too.
Who knows? I always learn more.
That's why we do what we do, because we're always learning. If you're not learning in a job, I don't know. I don't think it would be as much fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, there's definitely a lot to know.
So speaking of learning, our residencies, our oncology residencies, I mean, that was really my first introduction to integrative oncology.
Yes.
Is that the same for you?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, we both were in hospital-based residencies. So that also adds an element of experience that is very different than what I experienced when I got out and had my own clinic.
Right. And when I completed my training, I went on to work in another hospital, you know, that was an integrative cancer center. So I've said it before, this is really all I know, except for when my dad was treated for his cancer, which was not in the place where I worked. And it all seemed very alien to me. The things that weren't available. I mean, it just was like, what do you mean? Because I assumed all cancer centers were like that. But anyways, So what would you say your transition from working in an integrative hospital to private practice was like?
You know, it's very different to work outside community oncology clinics as an outsider to those clinics than it is to be under the same roof with the medical oncologist and maybe sharing the lunchroom and, you know, getting to know them on a personal level. And there's just relationships that you develop when you're under the same roof that you just don't have when you're outside of the cancer center. So With that, I mean, professionally, of course, it's a lot easier to know each other and pass in the hallways and have a question and, you know, have that kind of collegial atmosphere that helps communication. Communication is probably a word that will come up repeatedly today because that's the breakdown. How do you communicate as a patient, and even as a provider, right now, even amongst conventional doctors, there is discussion about how do you continue the continuity of care after someone finishes treatment? How does that work with a medical oncologist or whoever the main point person is in the cancer center? So this is not just a naturopathic or integrative medicine question. It's kind of a global question for ongoing continuity of care for all patients who undergo treatment. That said, so in a community cancer center, it's so far removed from what we trained in when you're in a hospital setting with integrative practitioners down the hallway. So you have nutritionists down the hallway, you might have spiritual or pastoral care down another hallway, and you have psychoneuroimmunology specialists that help with the mind-body aspects. You have classes all day helping patients learn and educate in a private practice. You have your setting, which you provide as much of that as you can, either in-house in your practice, and many of us do that, right? Naturopathic, functional medicine doctors will put in-house a nutritionist or other caregivers that provide complementary care, or we refer out to the community. And there's many of us in our separate practices that put together a team of practitioners. So the team of practitioners requires them to travel from the community cancer center to maybe their naturopath like me, to the nutritionist who could be in an independent or at the cancer center, to maybe massage therapy, acupuncture, psychologist. So my experience putting it together on the outside of an integrative setting has been more challenging for sure for the patient and requires a level of communication that takes constant effort on everyone's part to put in the extra time and effort to make sure that everybody's communicating well and that the patient is being served.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of kept me from doing private practice is, I mean, having been a patient, you're tired. I mean, I would be seeing patients right after they would see the med onc. They wouldn't even have to go to a different room. They'd just stay in the room. I would come in the room. And there are patients who are too tired. Like they're like mentally like exhausted. And they're like, I don't want to see you today. I am too tired for this. And I'm like, fine, we'll check in next time, you know? But I can't imagine having to go to so many different locations. That just seems, for me, overwhelming. It's just, I mean, I don't realize like how much of a luxury it was for patients. I mean, now I do realize it was a luxury to be able to be in that sort of a facility.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side, the good news is I think large cancer centers are beginning to bring integrative oncology into the fold. So they're starting to put it under the same roof. And so large, whether it's MD Anderson, Sloan Kettering, I'm sure Dana-Farber and larger hospital settings are bringing it in under their own roof. I will say this, the way that they bring it in is not exactly the way I practice as a naturopath because I use a lot of supplements and plants and kind of biological agents like that. And what they'll usually bring under the roof are things that they know are the least likely to interact, right? Understandably, with ongoing treatments. So they'll bring in massage.
They have like acupuncture and yoga, I've seen.
Acupuncture, yoga.
And I see those as like, they're a start. I mean, sometimes there's, you know, a doctor or, you know, a nurse practitioner who has done some sort of integrative medicine training that people can see. I mean, I've seen these things. It's not quite as comprehensive as the hospitals that we've worked in.
No. And you know what it's lacking is a quarterback. Right. It's like you've got these players, but there's nobody telling or helping the patient decide which aspect of integrative medicine is most appropriate for their particular scenario at that particular time. And so I think that the advantage of having a point person of some kind, and whether it's an MD, a naturopath, or a different type of practitioner, doesn't matter, but somebody who knows the entire landscape well enough to say, oh, given what's going on with you, here's what I think would help. And it could be any one of the many aspects of complementary medicine that they're referring to.
Right. And that's what we used to, like, we always said that the med onc was the quarterback, but then like, you know, if it was something where he's just like, nope, you have to go see Dr. Sherman, you know, and then from there, you know, either he or I would say, okay, we need to get you into dietitian. We need to get you into physical therapy. You need acupuncture, you know, all of these things. So I guess, you know, we probably should define complementary medicine, like, because people hear of that and they hear alternative medicine. And oftentimes they get interchanged, but they are different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if you think about it literally, alternative medicine implies that you are doing something alternative from conventional. Alternative medicine is used to mean that the person is not doing conventional care, as opposed to complementary medicine, which complements the conventional. So complementary medicine is intended to get the most out of the conventional care. And then integrative medicine is basically when you combine complementary medicine with the conventional and you're practicing integrating it, right? You're integrating the two.
And I think it's interchangeable now. I think now complementary and integrative, those two things are completely interchangeable.
Yeah, I have a little preference for integrative because I feel like that's more true to what we're doing. We're not on the side. We're not off by 90 degrees like a complementary angle. there.
Stop bringing geometry into things.
We're not exactly
no math that. Here. There's no math involved in this podcast.
Yeah, it's a little bit more like a braid of hair, right? Like you're kind of overlapping, and because in time and space, I mean, you have a patient who is integrating other medicines into their conventional. I mean, integrative seems most descriptive to me, most true to what's happening.
I like integrative too. We should probably define the modalities that are being used in all integrative, complementary, and alternative medicine. The similarity is that they are all utilizing what's been divided into five categories.
Mm-hmm.
That includes mind-body therapies, which would be meditation, tai chi, yoga, music therapy, art therapy. There are the biologically based practices, which are your vitamins and herbs, diet, you know, nutrition services type things. Manipulative and body-based practices, chiropractic, massage, reflexology.
Mm-hmm.
Biofield therapy includes Reiki and therapeutic touch. And then you think of the whole medical systems like Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine. Naturopathic medicine is included in there, as is homeopathy.
Okay. Yeah. And I know that this is something that, you know, here we are sitting in the United States. We have one kind of way of thinking about it. And I know it changes around the world. So whether people are in Europe or in Asia or, you know, a lot of times, whether it's Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, Korean traditional medicines, they are, of course, offered in their respective countries as complementary care as well. Right?
Yeah, I was really surprised because I had put a post up kind of like, you know, like introducing that this might be coming up maybe in an episode. Mm-hmm. And I learned that in the Netherlands, there aren't integrative cancer centers. I guess it's just not a thing outside of the U.S. I don't know if it's a thing in Canada. I'm not familiar with cancer centers outside of the U.S. And I'm not really familiar with a lot of them inside, somewhat, you know, but I kind of get how they operate. But I thought that was fascinating. So I'm not quite sure how, if somebody wanted to get acupuncture or take herbs or something, like, I'm not quite sure how that's received overseas.
Yeah. There was a paper a few years ago in Integrative Cancer Therapies that looked at integrative oncology in several different countries. And the ones that they put in a chart, probably because the ones that they're most used in United States, the use of traditional complementary or integrative medicine was 50 to 60% use in the United States. Canada was 47 to 61%. Australia, about the same, 43 to 65%. Italy, 22% of people, and in Western Europe, it varied between 22 and 45%, big zone there, but that's probably because Western Europe is a lot of different cultures. So it looks like roughly, certainly more than a third, let's just say a third to a half of all people going through cancer care. And this paper was interesting because it talked about funding, you know, was it offered by, you know, there's, because a lot of these countries have socialized medicine. Was it offered to patients? How was it given? What was the culture as far as, you know, was it acceptable and stuff? So it was an interesting paper that we can link to on our website.
Yeah. If you send me the link, I can post that.
Yeah.
I do have a friend who was treated in New Zealand, and she said that her oncologist was pretty open to things, and he would tell her when to stop and, you know, when, you know, you just hold this during this treatment. But, you know, for her, it was a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. You know, I have found that it's safe and usually well received by the medical oncology community when people are doing more of the mind-body techniques or acupuncture or, like I said, non-biological therapies in general. There was a time, because we've been doing this for a while, right? I graduated in 2000. There was a time when medical oncologists literally said to people, it's your money, you can waste it if you want to, kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, you know, and so that would be a really good thing for us to talk about. Like, what are the concerns from a conventional care team about using integrative medicine along with conventional cancer care. And that's one of them I know for sure that my patients would express to me was that they were fearful of either, you know, being ridiculed, dismissed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you have, you know, doctors, and it's not just, we're not just saying this happens with oncologists, this happens with just conventional medicine in general, but you'll have someone say, don't try that, it might hurt you. And then there are other people who say, you know, do whatever you want, try it, it's not going to work anyways. So, you know, there are patients who just, you know, they don't know how to communicate mm-hmm. that, but there should be an awareness of, yes, there are potentials, you know, there is a potential for interaction, and that's mm-hmm. a huge concern, especially in oncology.
Yes.
And I guess the, you know, the case study that we always talk about is the St. John's wort.
Yes. Yes.
Because that's one thing mm-hmm. that is familiar to pretty much everyone in oncology.
So you're referring specifically to how St. John's wort can perhaps change the metabolism of various drugs to make
exactly.
them, yeah.
Ineffective. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. So for people out there who aren't familiar, St. John's wort is an herb that is often taken by people in general for like a low-level depression, you know, mm-hmm. like we talked about before, but we use the word melancholy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. You got the blues, you take St. John's wort. And so cancer patients were taking this because they had cancer and yeah. Mm-hmm. They were kind of feeling a little blue, to put it mildly. And there were interactions. It interfered with how, because some cancer drugs need to be converted once they're inside your body. They need to be converted to the active form. And it interfered with irinotecan, right?
Yeah, that was the one. That's the one we have the evidence for. But yeah, there's reason to believe that St. John's wort, maybe kava, some other plants could change the way we metabolize the drugs to make it so that the drug is not being therapeutic. So with chemo drugs in particular, there's that very, very small range of dosing in which they are effective, right? So you need a certain amount to be circulating. And, you know, we're talking about toxic agents, let's be honest, right? So these are toxic compounds that are titrated down to a very specific range. And that small therapeutic window means that you have to get a certain amount in your bloodstream for it to kill the cancer cells. But if you get too much, it could kill your normal cells as well. And you could actually take in a fatal dose if they gave you too much of a chemotherapeutic drug, right? So this is, it's called a therapeutic window or a therapeutic dose. And what we don't want to do with a narrow therapeutic window or a dose where you need just enough, but not too much of something, is change how the body metabolizes that drug. That's the last thing anyone wants to do. On that note, we have to also say that not just plants, but also other medications can change that dosing. So I'll say this in probably many episodes, always use one pharmacist for all of your needs and make sure that pharmacist knows that you're doing a certain chemotherapy or another drug. So that one pharmacist knows all of your drugs and they're all in one system. So if there is anything that changes or interacts with your therapeutic agents, it'll get flagged. You know, it's actually automated in most places. It's on a computer and it red flag
as long as
up.
They have the list of what you're taking that is natural. I mean, because people aren't necessarily buying their herbs and supplements from their pharmacist.
I'm not talking about the natural stuff. I'm saying that the interaction, the risk
between medications, you're
much
talking
higher.
About-
yes. It's much higher for medications. Med to med interactions are much, much more likely than medication to supplement or medication to plant.
And that was a huge part of what I did. And I don't even know if it was in, I'm sure it was in my job description, but because before I would see a patient, I would review their chart and then we would make sure that they were still taking the medications that were in their chart. And oftentimes I was like, are you taking these two things? Because that's, you know, there is a potential and it wouldn't even be supplements. So I was constantly monitoring not only their supplements, but also their prescription medications to make sure that there weren't, I mean, every visit I was reviewing it.
Yeah. Yeah. The risk of drug-drug interaction goes up with every drug you add until I think around, I don't remember if it was 4 or 5 drugs, the risk is nearly 100% that they're going to interact in some way. It may not be that you have to discontinue them, but they're going to start interacting, right?
You know, and so like other concerns would be just, you know, not being familiar with what they're taking. I would say the general public hears about, you know, herbs and supplements that might help with cancer patients. You know, a lot of it's in the news, mm-hmm. maybe, or like social media or something. So, you know, and oftentimes doctors are getting information because there is something maybe in their news feed, in their mm-hmm. in their realm,
yeah.
that might be a negative story.
That reminds me, there was that paper that made the rounds a few years ago. It was from 2017, I believe. Yes, 2017. And it talked about how, well, all the headlines said those who take alternative treatments, cancer treatments that are alternative treatments, had an increased risk of death. And that was actually what the headline said.
Well, the headline said, I think they said complementary medicine.
Oh, yeah.
Which made it worse.
That's the inaccurate one. Because it wasn't complementary medicine.
No, but that's what made it sensational was that when you had to read the story to see that they were talking about patients who were diagnosed with early stage cancer who opted for alternative therapies in place of conventional therapy. So they never received standard of care, but you didn't know that until you read the article. And if you just got that popping up, you know, in your newsfeed.
Well, and yes, how many people go to the primary, you know, no one goes to the citation.
No, it wasn't even in the citation. It was in the news, like the news body actually told you what it was about. But the headline, which is what I think majority of people read, they were like, oh my gosh.
Well, and even some of the bodies of some of the articles at that time, because everyone's in a rush to make sure they splash that up really quickly while it's, you know, when you get the 30 seconds of attention out there. Here's what happened. There was over 1.6 million people that they tracked in the National Cancer Database, and it was between the years of 2004, 2013. Guess how many people out of just almost 1.7 million people who had breast, colorectal, prostate, and I believe lung was in there as well. Guess how many people refused conventional treatments in favor of one or more alternative therapies?
Out of 1.6 million?
Yeah. In this particular study, I'll tell you, it was 281 people.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So percentage-wise, I don't even know what that calculates out to be, but it's not much. So out of these 281 people who refuse conventional treatment in favor of alternative therapies for the purposes of this publication were defined as, and I am laughing a little bit because this is ridiculous, and it was ridiculous at the time. The definition, I'm reading this right off their website, the NIH website, National Institutes of Health. The definition of alternative therapy used by the database included any, quote, unproven therapies from a non-medical provider. That was their definition. So it's not what we're defining, just for the record.
Okay.
And it had nothing to do with, like you said, the alternative therapy. It had to do with the fact that some people put off the conventional medicine of these 281 people. They put off doing the conventional medicine, whether it be surgery. I'm sure many of them it was surgery. In lieu of doing this alternative medicine first. And then, of course, their cancer advanced in that time. And whether they did an alternative cancer or not didn't matter. Any delay of conventional treatment led to worse outcomes. So it didn't matter if they did alternative or if they just went home and pretended it wasn't happening, but any delay of actual conventional treatment is what led to the outcome of worse prognosis and more death. So I just thought that paper, let me just tell you, if it was the flip side, I don't know how they even got that paper through with 281 cases out of 1.7 million 1. people.
6 million?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. They'll be adding some people on this.
1.68 to be exact.
Okay.
So I was rounding up. I was rounding up. It's true.
More math.
But, you know, it was a silly and fairly useless paper, because if they had said the truth was delay of treatment leads to worse outcomes, which I don't think would have shocked anybody.
Right.
So just for the record, when that paper came out, I was in my private practice and there was a lot of damage control that I had to do to explain both to medical oncologists and my fellow colleagues in the conventional cancer care center nearby and to my patients to say, okay, this is actually what happened. It's nothing that we need to be really concerned with because we're not doing alternative medicine, first of all. And second of all, you know, I gave them the spiel on what they really found in that particular study.
Can I tell you that I was working at the hospital and we all read the headlines and everything. I don't think it ever came up. I don't think I ever heard anything from my med onc about it. I think just people, when they read it, they were like, oh, delay of treatment. So, but also they had an understanding of what we did in mm-hmm. this integrative setting. You know, the naturopathic doctors there, we were the safety checks. You know, we were making sure that patients are doing things. Oftentimes I was the one talking to patients about, you know, you need to be taking your aromatase inhibitor daily. And, you know, we're often the ones counseling patients about how to take their medications. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting because I remember having that like panicky thought, like I'm going to be answering these questions, you know, hour after hour with each appointment. And it really didn't come up.
So interesting.
Such different environments.
Yes.
Another point is that oncologists are so busy. They're so busy, you know, staying on top of their own fields that for them to learn about all of the natural things, you know, all of the other options out there. I mean, they're probably familiar with acupuncture, especially if they've had it themselves, you know, massage, chiropractic, those kinds of things. But in terms of like the supplements part, they don't have that background. I don't know if it's being offered in schools now. Traditionally, like they don't really, unless it's their own personal interest. And so to have that time to be able to sit down with someone, I think that's, you know, that's probably another issue why sometimes it's just not dealt with. You know, I would have, as the naturopathic doctor, I would have patients wanting to take certain supplements and they would show up with printouts of studies or what they thought were studies, articles, I guess I should say, on like the benefits of these different herbs or vitamins or whatever. I'm sure they went to their oncologist with it too. I know that they went to the oncologist because then he would say, oh no, show that to Dr. Sherman. Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, have to go through this. And so it is time consuming.
Well, in community clinics, oncologists see around 25 patients per day. That is, you know, 22, 25, somewhere in that region, all the medical oncologists in the community clinics where I was. And when I say community clinics, that's separate from academia and it's separate from private hospitals or integrative settings. And so, yeah, there's no time between patients to go brush up on, you know, curcumin's interactions with their 5-FU or whatever drug they're giving. But it needs to be done, right? At the same time, somebody needs to do it. And I think working with a pharmacist, a naturopath, a medical practitioner of any kind who is versed in both plant and supplement medicine as well as the conventional side. Because let's be clear, anyone who's doing natural medicine during treatment in particular needs to work with someone who understands the mechanisms of action of the conventional treatments. If the practitioner that you're seeing of any stripe is using biological agents of any kinds. By that, I mean physical, right? Like supplements, something you swallow, something has a chemical action in your body, plants, whatever. They have to understand the drugs or the radiation. And so if they can't answer how that is working, then they shouldn't be combining them. That means that they don't have enough knowledge to really understand how to blend them together and to integrate them.
So I have an interesting story. I had several patients who, when I would see them at their first appointment, I'd go through their supplements and they were taking alpha lipoic acid. They had already started treatment somewhere else. They were seeing an integrative doctor and that doctor had recommended a whole list of supplements, including alpha lipoic acid. And in my training, I was told never to recommend that to somebody in active treatment if they're getting radiation or chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And so these are integrative medical doctors who were prescribing it. And what I used to tell my patients is I was like, first of all, the dose that they're prescribing is not a therapeutic dose, but it still is an antioxidant. And so I don't recommend it at all. I would recommend holding that mm-hmm. until we're done with treatment.
Yeah. And lipoic acid or any of those sulfur-containing antioxidants are something that I always have people put aside, especially during radiation, which I think is easier to undo right? Antioxidants are more likely to undo the effects of radiation. Radiation works by oxidizing cells to the point where the cell succumbs to the damage. So it kills itself basically because it's so damaged. And one of the things during chemotherapy that I always had people do was talk to the pharmacist, usually the pharmacist who is well acquainted with the drug itself, so maybe the one that's even dispensing it at the center, and ask them about the drug. And, you know, if it's a drug that acts only like 5-FU is a very short acting drug, which is why people get a continuous pump of 5-FU put on them for colorectal cancer, for example, don't take it while the drug is going in, and don't take it when there's any active chemotherapeutic time. But if it's a chemo that only works for a day or a few hours, you can talk to pharmacists, you can talk to medical oncologists and say, how long is the action of this drug? There's something called the area under the curve, which is a pharmacy phrase for like, how long does it take to leave my body? And when is it safe for me to do something? Let's just say you're taking a plant that works really well for your sleep, but of course you don't want to take that plant during treatment. You can ask your medical oncologist, when would it be safe to take? Is there a time period between my treatments that I can resume taking that, where you're not worried about interacting with the drug because the drug's no longer having an active effect on killing cancer cells? So there, sometimes you can dance in between, especially when you have a 3-week or 4-week period between chemotherapy infusions.
So that's a really good segue for us to start talking about, how do you talk to your doctor about getting integrative therapies? And I mean, we're talking about more than just taking supplements and herbs and vitamins. I mean, acupuncture is one. You know, I've had patients who've come to me who are also seeing Ayurvedic practitioners. You know, can you go to a chiropractor? You know, all of these kind of modalities. And yeah, I think people do kind of stick to the safe ones, you know, like the, you know, meditation, like you're saying, the mind body things, but even yoga. I mean, from my training doing the yoga for cancer, I mean, there are things that we do not do with our patients. Mm-hmm. That I have seen other yoga practitioners doing with their clients.
Well, and that brings up the point that this is really opinions that we're looking at, right? And so I think one of the things that we need to discuss is how each person feels about the doctor they're seeing. Like when you talk to your medical oncologist, your surgical oncologist, your radiation oncologist, whomever you're talking with, of course, you want to have 100% trust in that person. And you do need to find people that you can talk to in a peer-to-peer fashion. Like, it shouldn't be feeling afraid to say something or getting a, you know, look that you don't want to get from your doctor. I've had this happen with patients who are like, well, I bring it up, but the doctor gives me a certain face that is clearly disapproving. And I think that breaking down that hierarchy in the room is a little bit, it's important. It's important that the patient be heard. Approaching the doctor in such a way, and I hate to make generalizations, but I think this one is fairly true, that respects the fact that they are an expert in what they're doing, and they probably have a pretty good ego that you need to be gentle with, to not go abruptly. You know, it's kind of like how you approach a dog. You don't go straight up to a dog and expect it to take kindly. You turn your shoulders a little bit and you come at it at an angle. So you're done. And so kind of pave the way to be gentle and not be abrupt. Like, I think sometimes trying to go straight on receives a lot of resistance.
Oh, I mean, I've experienced that because I've had those kind of interactions with my doctors, not my oncologist, but definitely my other doctors. Yeah. Mm. Because I'm so used to having certain conversations. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm given a look, I come out swinging. So I get it. I do get it.
So basically, think of it like this. You don't want to go toe-to-toe and have a standoff of any kind. You want to let your own ego go as well and say you don't need to go in there with an agenda, but just with an open mind and understand that you are getting an opinion and you're still in control of your own body and your destiny. So you get the opinion. You see if it was a thoughtful opinion or if it was just a snap, knee-jerk reaction of, don't do anything if, you know, it's not in my toolbox. You know, those are two very different reactions. You can kind of tell if it's a thoughtful reaction or if it's based on just a abrupt, ego-based, don't tell me what's good for you reaction, which unfortunately is not uncommon still. I mean, I'd love to say that everyone just goes out and gets along, but a lot of times it's not like that. The hierarchy in the room is real, right? And so, yeah, just being mindful and respectful and expecting to be respected back is very important, because no one should be disrespected. That ultimately, and I think this is really empowering to think about before you walk in the room, the oncologist is working for you. You're the one paying them. You're one of their 25 people for the day, or 20 people for the day, or however many they're seeing. They are working. You are the patient. And so in some ways, the hierarchy should be reversed. But of course, it's not, because they have their expertise that you certainly need to listen to. But in any case, I do find that telling yourself, reminding yourself that, you know, you deserve respect, and that that should happen when you walk in the room. And to be honest, I've actually counseled patients in changing their doctor when they weren't respected. I think that that has to happen. I don't think it's good medicine unless they're on the receiving end of a respectful interaction with their oncologist or any other doctor for that matter.
I think that something that also is important is that the patient do research on their side. So let's say they want to get acupuncture or massage or chiropractic. I mean, I remember there was a time when people, and then maybe it still is this way, where people were told not to get massage if they had cancer because it could spread the cancer. I mean, I remember massage therapists like learning that at one point. So if you're interested in getting chiropractic or massage or acupuncture, finding someone who works with cancer patients, I think would be reassuring. And so that way your MedOnc doesn't have to vet anyone. You know, it's like you can say, I found this acupuncturist who works with cancer patients, and I'm interested in getting acupuncture for this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and oftentimes these integrative providers can have consults with your doctor as well. They can talk to them. And, you know, if there's any concern, they can reach out and say, I've been working with this patient for this many months and I'm not seeing any changes, you know, like, so having that open dialogue, I think, between integrative providers is important, but also finding integrative providers who have experience with cancer patients.
Yes, I totally agree. If it's someone doing an alternative, complementary, we should say.
Complementary.
Yes, yeah, like acupuncture or massage, whatever. They should have experience working within oncology for sure.
And especially, I mean, like all of them, but I just keep thinking chiropractic, you know, particularly they have to be familiar with what's going on with you and what's going on with your bone health.
Yes, completely. I totally agree.
It's crucial. I mean, that's crucial for anyone, but for cancer patients, you know, they really need to have that additional experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say something too about when someone goes to their oncologist and wants their opinion on something, oftentimes the most they're going to get is an okay. They're not going to condone it all the time. They might not say, yeah, that's a great idea, but they might be saying, that's fine if that's what you want to do. And so I want to be clear that I would say the majority of time that is the reaction that I got. Over time, when oncologists got to know me or know other practitioners in the community well enough to know that they shouldn't be threatened, that we're not talking people out of doing their conventional medicine kind of thing, I actually got referrals from certain doctors, but they were select doctors. Out of 18 oncologists, I got referrals from 2 or 3.
And that's another question is, you know, do you know of an acupuncturist, or do you know of a provider that I could see, you know, asking nurses, asking other people at the cancer center?
Yes.
If it's not offered at the cancer center where you are.
That's a really good point, because they might have an idea of who's done well from their perspective.
Talking about staff at the cancer center.
Staff at the cancer center. Yes. Not the person in the waiting room that's sitting next to you. Which is fine too, because, you know, word of mouth works. But if you're talking to the nurse or the doctor or whomever that sees 20 patients a day or more, they're going to see a trend in who's doing well that wouldn't be visible to a single person out in the waiting room sitting in a chair who had a good experience. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that, and they may know the credentials of that person and make sure that they're not just someone who hung a shingle and was self-proclaimed as whatever type of healer, which happens a lot more in other states. In the United States, you know, naturopathic medicine, for example, is regulated in many states. I can't remember 18 or 20 at this point, but the majority of states don't have any licensure for naturopaths. So you literally could just put the word or the letters after your name, hang a shingle outside a door at a plaza and call yourself one. So that's an issue. And we can put more details about that on our website too, and how to figure out where to find a licensed or at least well-trained, as in 4-year postgraduate school, perhaps a residency too, naturopath.
Or just an oncology trained ND.
Oh, even better.
Because there are requirements to get board certified in naturopathic mm-hmm. oncology.
And in this post-COVID era, I know it's not truly post-COVID, we still have some COVID around, but in this era of remote medicine, there's plenty of practitioners who are willing to do remote consultations, and they are specialized in naturopathic oncology. So we'll put a link up so that people can find them in their area. I think that's a great idea.
So any other tips for people in talking to their provider, their med onc, about incorporating integrative therapies?
You know, I think the conversation people should have with their oncologist is similar to the one I have, and that is to stick to common ground first. Like, what do you have as a common ground? It might be nutrition, for example, or exercise or sleep. Establishing that your doctor also believes that a nutritious diet that's largely plant-based is an important component of health in general, whether you're going through treatment or not. So even if you know nothing about the medical literature, you would still say, oh, you should eat well and have all the macronutrients and micronutrients in your diet. You should sleep well. You should move your body. And of course, stress doesn't do anyone any favor. So like you kind of sometimes breaking ground and making sure the common ground is there with the person. Because I can tell you now, if a doctor looked at me and poo-pooed any of that, I would be out. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to find someone else who's at least reasonable, because you don't need to be up on medical literature to agree on good health and going in the right direction.
And I think that was another thing that I kind of took for granted where I was working, was the fact that there were dietitians on hand. So if patients came to us and they said, well, I read this book and I want to do this diet, or, you know, I'm seeing someone outside of here and they told me I need to be eating this certain way, I immediately put in a referral, and our dietitians knew about many alternative diets and knew their pros and cons. That was another advantage, having these oncology trained registered dietitians. And I know I've discussed with you before, maybe it was offline, but I didn't realize that there are so few of those out there. Again, I'm spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
And so just making sure that if you are seeing a registered dietitian, that they are oncology trained. And yeah, there's some awesome ones out there on the Instagram. And so maybe I'll put some links. Maybe there's a link to where people can find them.
Yeah, and I bet there is.
Yeah.
I'm open to putting that up on our website, because I think that's really important. And I think that it's a unique time. And I can think right off the top of my head of times that I disagreed with people who weren't oncology trained and they were dietitians, and you're like, you know, that's not quite appropriate for what's going on. So yeah, I would think that anyone who's specifically certified as oncology specialized nutritionist would be ideal. And dietitians, I know, are RDs, right?
Right.
Registered dietitians. And then there's nutritionists, which again, that's a less regulated term and often outside hospital floors.
And you know, just the fact that there aren't necessarily dietitians that are in a cancer center for patients to see. I mean, I think that would be an important part of an integrative care team. Like, if you have to put together your own integrative oncology care team, I would say the dietitian would be mm-hmm. like just right up there. I think that's so important for patients, because there's so much information, there's so much misinformation out there. And to have that as your resource, I think that would be a mm-hmm. definite person to put on your, I keep wanting to say your zombie apocalypse team, but it kind of is. you want your dietitian, you want someone who knows about nutrition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there's an app called Eat This Much. Do you know about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's something else we can maybe we can link out to, because it might be useful for folks to just put in, you know, a game plan that they eat plants mostly. That's the bottom line. Bottom line is eat color, eat plants, and protein requisites are between 0.8 and 1 gram per kilo of your desired weight. like just in general, we're not talking about gaining weight or losing weight. We're just talking about health.
I like how you know that, like, this is stuff I never had to even think about. Like, it was just I got to like just let all of this stuff just flow out of my brain because I had somebody to do this who, yeah, they were amazing.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That would be nice. No, it was, it was.
You're like, why are you even in this conversation, Leah? You're a unicorn.
You know, I could tell you that nutritionally, I like old ways. Their motto used to be health through heritage because they look at the various lineages of our genetic makeup, right? So they look at, you know, did you hail from Asia, from Africa, from Europe? Like, where do your genes hail from? That's all they're talking about. And they create these pyramids, right? So it started with the Mediterranean diet, and now they have all these other ethnic diets. But in all cases, they're all very similar in that they're almost all plants, right? Mm-hmm. It's all largely plant-based, and then adequate proteins, adequate fats. So those pyramids are really useful. I think that's probably where I would steer people, you know, in my office when I have all of 5 or 10 minutes at the end of a visit to help people find a way to eat well. I would say that's probably the primary recommendation I made.
I hope that this information is helpful to people. I hope that we've given enough information that people are more comfortable approaching their doctors about integrative, you know, therapies.
Yeah, I think between our show notes and our website, we can link out to maybe some resources that will be more useful from a practical standpoint.
Yeah, definitely we can put links in the show notes as well as on the website.
Great.
So you can find us on social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook, and sometimes we're on the Twitter.
And the we you mean is the Cancer Pod.
That's right. And me. Okay, I am social media, right?
You are.
No, the Cancer Pod. You can find the Cancer Pod on all the social medias that are out there. I'm so hip. And we're on the TikTok too, even though I really haven't done much with that. But who knows? Maybe I'll get inspired and do a dance.
Yeah. Why not?
With you, Tina.
I'll do it. You know what? I love
I know
to dance.
You've actually been the one who's been wanting us to do a dance.
I'm ready.
Oh my. Okay.
Name it, man. Name the time and place, and I will be there dancing.
On that note, I'm Dr. Leah Sherman.
And I'm Dr. Tina Kayser.
And this is the Cancer Pod.
Until next time.